Hi, my name's Erwin Elman. I'm the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth for Ontario.
I'm wondering if we could start by having you tell us when and why this Office of the Provincial Advocate for Children and Youth was created.
There was a piece of legislation that was passed in Ontario that created our office about 4 years ago. And it took a couple of years before they hired the first independent provincial advocate, which was myself. So I've been at the job a little more than 2 years. In building our office, the legislation had given me direction to say our purpose was to elevate the voice of children and youth who are in provincial care in one way or another. So that means young people in child welfare care, young people in custody, children and youth living in mental health, children's residences. And then the Act also said there are some people who are on the cusp or at risk of coming into provincial care, and they name First Nations children and youth, special children and youth with special needs. And those are the core children and youth that we're designed to serve, to elevate their voice, and in doing so, protect their rights.
And what are some of the ways that you take on that role of elevating the voices of children and youth?
The two basic ways is that we have a individual advocacy system where young people who are in our mandate are able to phone us through a 1-800 number or use an email and speak to an advocate here. The advocate then first listens and then makes an advocacy plan with them. Sometimes leading the plan, sometimes helping the youth lead the plan, sometimes walking beside them. And always the advocacy is from a rights-based approach, always elevating the voice of young people. Some people feel that we should be acting in the best interest of young people and children and youth, and service providers often wonder why we're not, if they think something, the service provider thinks something's in the young person's best interest, but the young person says, my rights are that that it isn't what I want. We would stand with the young person, and our act instructs us to do that, actually, because the young people I mentioned, those in provincial care, are probably the most vulnerable children and youth in our province, because many, many ways they're invisible, and the state in some ways is their guardian or parent, and they need an avenue through which to speak up. We also do systemic work where, from young people's point of view, we will identify issues or concerns and do either policy work, or we could review in a particular organization or service after we've received a number of complaints from young people about the kind of treatment or service that they're receiving. And we have the ability to review those services from a young person's point of view, elevating again their voice.
So when children and youth contact your office through phone or email, what are some of the most common reasons or common concerns that they bring forward?
They're usually calling because they don't like some of the treatment they receive one way or another. Be anything from they don't like the food that they're having or receiving to access to their family or their parents, whether they're in custody or a children's mental health facility or in child welfare care. They don't like the placement that they're living in. They feel that they're not thriving there or that they're not being treated well, to things like they feel that they were restrained unfairly or in a place of custody they were assaulted by staff. That's happened, and we get those calls. In terms of systemic advocacy, that when we go and talk to young people and we hear concerns about the kind of resources that they would like, that they don't have, the barriers to education, to employment, to life skills, to recreation, the barriers that they're encountering, to things like lack of stability. They might want to have a relationship with a supportive adult in a particular place but haven't been able to find it, or they found it, yet that supportive adult has moved on to be finding a place to belong, to feel comfortable in. We hear those kinds of issues and complaints as well. And often, when you go and talk to young people in our systems, they certainly feel a lack of control over what's happening to them. And before they came into our systems, they had that feeling. And once they're in our systems, the feeling is in many ways exacerbated. So those are the three kinds of complaints we hear when we talk to them about systemic issues.
You talk about children under state care as mm-hmm. a broad thing and the systems being served by the state. Do you feel that there is a level of commonality in terms of the rights of children and youth under various kinds of state care, be it juvenile detention or institution or foster care or these different kinds of setups? Or is there a really broad range of the kinds of situations that children and youth find themselves in under state care?
Both. So I do think there's a commonality. It's quite clear to me that the needs and the issues facing children and youth when you talk to them as individuals are varied. But the commonality is in what I said earlier. And some people call it social determinants of health. Some people call it, when you talk to people involved in custody, they talk about criminogenic factors or environment factors. Basically, when you talk to young people, it boils down to three things. In all our systems, young people face barriers to practical resources to help them move on in life, mental health services, as I said, housing, employment, access to education. All young people in our systems at some point face barriers, face challenges in finding a place to belong, finding those supportive adults that can be that one person that changes somebody's life. And we all have those, and all of us who are successful all have those adults we can think about. Young people in our systems, no matter where they come from, have challenges in finding those people. And they also all, as I've said, find challenges in finding ways to be in control of their lives, to be in control of the service that they're receiving, the decisions that need to be made that affect the rest of their lives, to have the hope that they can take control of their lives, that they can actually go to college or university, that they have the ability to do this, to make this happen. Those three factors, resources, I call it connections, and a sense of voice or personal agency, those three factors, and the lack of them, are common among any of the young people in our mandate.
I'm wondering if we can turn now to focus the discussion on youth in conflict with the law and in the criminal justice system. I guess to begin, you know, you mentioned those three factors, lack of connections, lack of resources, lack of control. Would you say that those are the main factors that put children and youth at risk of becoming involved in the criminal justice
certainly.
System?
That certainly is how I believe young people get into situations where there's conflict with the law. And it's not just one thing or another. So you go and speak to young people in custody, and they will say, they would talk about the lack of opportunity for employment or education or support in education. And they would talk about certainly some places where there's gangs, for instance. They would talk about the gang being their family. That is an answer to the kind of connection that I was talking about. And you always hear the language about the lack of positive role models at home or the absent fathers, and you hear those stories, and that's part of it and true. And remember, I've said not every young person is the same, but generally that's true. And a sense of hopelessness from some of those young people, that what choice do they have besides being involved in activities that would land them in custody. So I think the idea of resource, connection, voice fits firmly with that. Studies like the Roots of Youth Violence that Roy McMurtry and Alvin Curling wrote a few years ago talk about the same kinds of things. And that's a helpful way of understanding how to approach youth in conflict with the law.
Once youth are in detention or in the criminal justice system, what are some of the factors that make it particularly difficult or challenging for them to get through that experience?
The project of youth custody in Ontario is a very difficult one. The government, I give credit to the government for saying what we want to do is create a relationship-based youth custody program. We want to use the opportunity of custody to change the direction of the lives of young people who enter our facilities. This is the provincial government, not the federal government. And that's a huge challenge because you have young people coming there generally against their will. And no matter how you cut it, being in custody is punishment for what they've done. And that's certainly understood by the young people there. And it's extreme punishment. It's, you know, I remember being in one of the facilities, and there was a, what they call a code blue. And that meant that everybody in a facility had to go back into their rooms, which were then locked. And the rooms, another word for cells. And they were put in the rooms, and then one at a time they had to be strip searched because there was a contraband in the unit. And I spoke to a class, I think it was at Humber College, about this. I was saying, imagine if you're in your sociology 101 class, and at any moment the dean of social sciences can say code blue, and everybody in that class has to go into a room, take their clothes off, and one at a time a guard or a YSL youth service officer comes in and looks in your unit, looks in your clothes, and looks at you to make sure there's no contraband on you. And then they say, okay, put your clothes back on, you can go back to class. And you never know when that is going to happen. That's the life you live. You just know that you are out of that kind of control over your life. That's the kind of situation you live in. To me, and to the young people, I think, who are in custody, that's punishment enough. We don't need to make youth custody any more difficult than that. But that is the reality of youth custody. They still have in the youth custody facilities, many youth custody facilities, a corrections kind of approach, which comes from the adult facilities, which is not a let's change their lives, let's use this moment for them as young people to make a difference in their lives. And when young people are in custody, it's fine to have programming, to have school, to have supports, even if it does happen in a facility. But then what happens when the young person gets out and goes back to their communities and at home? And what young people have said to me, I remember one young man clearly saying, it's all well and good, but you know that I'm going back to my community, and you know I'm going to be back here one day, right? You know that that's going to happen. Don't pretend that that's not. And that was where his mindset was. He was not sure what was going to happen other and what choices he would have back in his community other than what he had been doing. And we need to find ways of establishing more resources in those communities when young people come back. And that's the real challenge of how we want to operate our youth justice facilities.
Why do you feel that in Ontario, that in Canada, we resort to punitive incarceration of children and youth rather than trying to set more systems in place for conflict resolution, restorative justice, increasing access to education and community connections and resources for young people with their whole lives ahead of them?
I've been struggling to find a way to create a message that resonates. Because what resonates, I think, with the public right now is that young people are dangerous. They need to be taught a lesson. So lock them up and show them that tough love, and then they'll change. Because both the community needs to be safe and they need to be taught a lesson. And the statistics, the literature, the movement in other countries around the world, including the United States, which took a tough on youth approach, says that that doesn't work. And this is what I believe, that an investment in our communities and our young people is a much more economical, effective approach than locking people up, than putting people in those situations where they feel completely out of control, where they are completely out of control of their lives and feel, have the potential for feeling very hopeless. The government uses this argument that we need to ensure public safety. And I think about now the Ashley Smith inquest, and Ashley Smith entered the youth custody system because in New Brunswick she threw apples at a postal worker. And got charged and then ended up in custody and never got out and was transferred many, many times both in her own province and then out of province, and then finally transferred when she turned 18 to adult facilities and ended up hanging herself in an institution. And when I spoke to the parliamentary committee at the House of Commons on Bill C-4, which had died on the order paper before the last election, but was an act to amend the Youth Criminal Justice Act, one of the conservative MPs asked me, had I ever met a parent whose child had died at the hands of a young offender? And he had, and that was impetus for his bill. And I hadn't. I'd met many people who had lost friends who had died. And I didn't have an answer that I thought was very helpful to him, although I did offer to meet with the parent that he had in question. But now I've met at least two parents who've had children die in youth custody facilities. And I think his question to me about had I ever met a parent whose child had died a violent death at the hands of a young offender, I could ask him, has he ever met a parent whose child had died in youth custody facilities? What are we going to do about it? And I don't think the answer is to lock more people up. I think the answer is to invest in our children. And I think it's very clear.
You mentioned the case of Ashley Smith, and also we've been reading a lot in the headlines about Gleb Alfyorov. I'm wondering if you can talk a bit more about why Canadian youth are dying unnatural deaths behind bars in our country.
Well, in both those cases, although one Ashley died in federal custody and Gleb in Ontario facility, youth justice facility, in both those cases, the issues of mental health and mental illness were of primary concern to them as young people. And the system, which still I think is evolving from a corrections based in Ontario and the youth justice system and certainly the federal system, the systems, not just the facilities, the systems didn't have the resources or know how to handle young people. They weren't the first. And unless things change, probably won't be the last. And what I believe we need is a completely integrated system where, and an educated system where young people who enter our facilities can expect the support and treatment, and I mean treatment in the mental health sense, the treatment that they need to find a way to come out of that facility better than when they went out. Certainly for our young people, we need to believe that when we place them in custody, we expect them to come out fuller, more whole as a person, more hopeful as a person than when they went in. And in order to do that, we need to understand them, understand their needs, and be able to provide resources to meet their needs. And in the case of both Gleb and Ashley, they obviously had mental health issues that they were struggling with, and the system wasn't able to provide for them. In fact, I would say the system, in the way it manifested itself, exacerbated both conditions of Gleb and Ashley.
You mentioned in passing that the deaths of Gleb and Ashley were not isolated, mm-hmm. that these kinds of things have come up in the past. And I've read that you made comments that, you know, there have been similar inquests into youth deaths in custody, and that the recommendations coming from these inquests have largely not been implemented. What do you think needs to happen, and what are the steps that your office is taking to try and work on that front to improve the conditions of youth in custody and to try and prevent these kinds of deaths from happening in the future?
There have been, I think, in the last 15 years, I think 9 deaths of young people in custody in situations where the province or the federal government, mostly the province, has taken guardianship of the young people because they've been in conflict with the law. So back when there was open custody, they might have been in open custody or in secure custody. And many of the inquests, for instance, that were held in of these young people suggested that mental health services needed to be provided in custody facilities, or access to mental health services needed to be available to young people if they were leaving custody. And in those cases, they weren't. So that was an example of the kind of recommendations that have been made over the years that haven't really been resolved, haven't been fully implemented. There are recommendations, even with the most recent inquest with Gleb, there were recommendations that, you know, the custody facility shouldn't have provided shoes with shoelaces to him, so that if he hadn't had those, he wouldn't have been able to hang himself from a fire alarm or a smoke detector in his cell, in his room. And so I guess the facility no longer gives the young people their shoes with shoelaces. And when we're involved in inquests, we are always informed by young people. So we find a group of young people who've been in conflict with the law, been in similar situation, who can tell us what they think about some of the testimony that's happening. And they heard that recommendation. They thought it made sense. But I remember one of them saying something about trying to solve human problems with institutional solutions, and that doesn't work. That, yes, it's true that if he didn't have the shoelaces, he might not have been able to hang himself. But, you know, the fact that nobody had talked to him for weeks on end, that he spent most of those weeks in his cell, in his room, that was problematic. And that probably, the human relationship would have been gone a long way to save him more than saving him from his shoelaces. And I think that sort of tone, that kind of recommendation that was around relationship building, relationships around attentiveness to the young people in our institutions, can be found in many of the inquests that have happened in the past. What we're doing is creating a database of all the inquests recommendations that come from inquests that revolve around a child in our mandate. So that could be not just young people in custody, but young people in child welfare care or connected to child welfare care in one way or another, special needs young people. And we're creating a database looking at the recommendations that came from those inquests and allowing people, the public, to enter into the database, for instance, mental health services, and see how many inquest juries made recommendations about mental health services over the last 15 years, to see what those recommendations said. And we've asked also people who have had those recommendations aimed at them or directed to them to respond and tell us what, if anything, they've done to implement those recommendations. And actually, sometimes they've said, well, we didn't implement this recommendation because X, Y, and Z, and it didn't make sense to us. And that's fair, but at least those answers are in our database, and you can see what people have said they've done over time around some of those recommendations and what hasn't been done. And we do this because it's one way of both honoring the young people and children who died that were in our mandate, but also helping them become less invisible, bringing them out of the shadows. If they're in state care or provincial care, those are our children. Everybody who's listening, those young people who live in children's aid care or live in custody, the province has taken guardianship, literally decided to parent those children for you, for all of us. They're Ontario's children, truly Ontario's children, who have died in our care. And I think we don't think of them that way. They're not visible to us. And by sort of trying to make sure the inquest recommendations see the light of day, continue to see the light of day. So Ashley is not just a headline until after her inquest is done. That's a way of both making her visible fully and others like her, and honoring her. And that's why we've done the inquest database.
And where can listeners find out more information, both about this database project and about your office and its services for youth?
Go to our website at provincialadvocate.ca. advocacy@provincialadvocate.on.ca or email advocacy@provincialadvocate.on.ca, and we can be in contact with you.
Thanks again.
Thank you.